Hi, good morning, guys. Welcome to Longwall USA 2013. I want to get the ball rolling this morning, and I'm going to make a few comments here before I introduce our opening speaker. My name is Steve Fiskor. I'm the editor-in-chief for Coal Age, an engineering and mining journal. This week, I'll be wearing my Coal Age hat, and I want to welcome you to Longwall USA. Actually, it's Longwall USA International Conference and Exhibition, and it's really the only trade show that's specifically geared towards longwall mining and underground mining in general. Longwall USA takes place every 2 years on the odd years in June, and over the course of the next 3 days, we are expecting about 2,000 people to attend Longwall USA. That might seem like a large number, and it is for our business, but when you think about the fact that there are roughly 50 longwall faces in the U.S., it's easy to see how many people are associated with and supporting this business. Longwall USA is more than an exposition. It's a chance to learn through a technical conference and to socialize with peers. I would like to draw your attention to the show guide right here. This will be basically your information for the conference. The conference is an important reason why we are here. Across the next 3 days, we're going to have 5 sessions. This morning, we're going to talk about new developments and technologies for longwall installations. This afternoon, we're going to talk about health and safety. Tomorrow morning, we're going to talk about proximity detection. Tomorrow afternoon, face automation. And on Thursday, we will close with reliability and maintenance. Most of the presentations will be 25 minutes long with 5 minutes for question and answers. So how do we know any of these presentations are credible? Longwall USA has an executive committee. These gentlemen are listed in the document, but I'd like to recognize them. The chairman of the committee is John Murphy. He's with the University of Pittsburgh. Steve Bessinger with BHP Billiton, I think, Anglo-American. Lou Boltic with Joy Mining Machinery. Jim Berea, who's a consultant for the longwall mining business. Paul Campbell, Longwall Associates. Dave Cheerden, who's with MSHA. Dave Ingram with NIOSH. Jim Kvitkovich. Jim Kay with John T. Boyd. John Lewis with Norwest Corp, Rich LeConte, who's with ICOF, Ed Niederreiter, who's with Joy, Uli Pashadag, who's with CAT, Keith O'Neill, who's with CAT, Sid Ping, who's out of WVU, Greg Sanders with Becker Mining America, and Joe Vendetti, who was with Solvay Chemicals. So in addition to the education track, Longwall USA also has networking functions that allow longwall coordinators to associate with their peers and equipment manufacturers. At the end of the day today, all delegates are invited to a gala reception on the show floor. There's a pirate game tonight. And tomorrow, Coal Age will host a keynote luncheon. And during that luncheon, there will be 3 awards presented to the top longwall mines in the U.S. The tickets to this luncheon are limited, so if you don't have a ticket, I suggest you see registration and buy a ticket. Any questions? No questions? Okay. With that being said, I'd like to officially kick off Longwall USA 2013 and introduce our first speaker, Dieter Haag. He joined Anglo-American in July 2008 as regional head of strategy and planning before being appointed as regional head of operations in April 2009. He has extensive management and mining experience working for De Beers for 23 years, primarily in production and senior management areas, including 6 years as general manager at a number of surface and underground operations and 3 years as COO for the South African mines. During this time, Haag built up a significant experience in the business improvement and operational performance, overseeing the rollout of lean production at De Beers prior to his departure. In his presentation this morning, he's going to talk about his experience with the Grosvenor Longwall Project. How about a warm welcome for Dieter?
Perfect. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's quite a step from De Beers to
which is obviously a diamond mining company, to Anglo-American Metallurgical Coal, which is a coal mining company. But, you know, it's still carbon. It's not quite as romantic. But there's one thing about mining, that's that the people are very similar or very much the same. My opportunity this morning is to share with you our journey as Anglo-American Metallurgical Coal on a design quest that will take us to benchmark longwall production. And it's a journey that has many twists, and it involves a lot of people, normally not wearing ties. Most miners don't wear ties. In fact, I was just sharing with Clive, when you see a mining engineer wearing a tie, what do you call him? Unfortunately, it's normally the accused. However, in this instance, that's not me. So, to start off with, that's an introduction for myself. Let's introduce Anglo-American. And Anglo-American, as a broader multinational, a diversified commodities company, focusing primarily on iron ore, platinum group metals, diamonds, and obviously coal across the planet, and very specifically met coal and thermal coal, with the bulk of the thermal coal sitting in South Africa, and met coal in Australia. Narrowing it down to my world of work, and this is talking about Anglo-American Metallurgical Coal. So this is a met coal company that's around about number three in the world in terms of seaborne metallurgical coal export. It's number two in Australia. As a result of that, obviously, the bulk of our operations centered in the northeast of Australia. And for those of you who are thinking about Australia as a place to work, it's about the bulk of operations are within less than 100 miles from the coast. As a mining company, it's generally been about growing your export product. This has been the journey, certainly for the last 5 years for Anglo Met Coal. Five growth projects on the horizon, but most significantly of those five growth projects, within that there are four longwall growth projects, and that's really where the journey, or my quest, begins. In terms of the opportunity that we have, it's all about the fact that we've got 5 billion tons of coal available to us as resources that are able to be mined. And within that, we have the great fortune that the bulk of our expansion in the next 8 to 10 years are focused in one area. So most companies have expansion projects, and they're all over the place. Well, we're lucky. They're all in one place, and it's Moranbah. And you'll get to hear the name Moranbah quite often during the next 20 minutes. In essence, it's a body of coal, high-quality metallurgical coal, around about 40-odd miles in extremity, varies between 250 to 500 meters deep. Right next to where the deposit is, there's a great railway line, there are great port facilities. So the normal constraints of expansion for modern coal companies don't really exist in terms of Anglo Met Coal. Well, that's a good thing. So this opportunity, we're going to spend a lot of money expanding our capacity. We've got to do it right. I mean, unless you're coming in at benchmark performance as an investment, you're just not going to survive in the modern world. You wouldn't get the project up, particularly in the last 12 months or so as prices have come off. The fact that you've got to be in first quartile to even have a chance of getting the project approved. So given this opportunity, we need to set some really high-level goals, and we really need to stretch ourselves. We're going to spend money. Let's make sure that money counts. And so in partnership, it's one of the things that this expansion program, I believe, is unique for. Right up front, before we started thinking too far along the lines of what we're going to do, we decided we're not going to do it alone, and we're going to do it with a company we believe has the same strategic views as we do. And so we've partnered up with Joy Global, and we've not only committed to a full system supply from Joy Global, but we've committed to a full program rollout, so all four longwalls and total system, is going to be with Joy Global. And we believe that's the best mechanism. Do it up front, do it as early as possible, and then have the journey together as a single team. And the single team focusing on clear objectives, the safest mine in the world and the most productive mine in the world. That's the design imperative. It's pretty straightforward. Went into the boss's office, said, this is what I want. So I said, yes, sir. And that's what we have been endeavoring to do in the last 12 months. So in order for people to engage around that vision, we thought it's important to have it as visible or as visual as possible. So what we did, we tried to create a picture of this lot. Now, this vision of the mine of the future, as we've said, it's all about safety. It's all about productivity. So in our context, productivity means it's just got to run longer, primarily. So that's 120 hours a week. That's what we believe is critical. To achieve that, it's got to be engineered right. You've got to be able to maintain it quickly. And while you're doing that, you've got to make sure this thing is fit for purpose in terms of the geotechnical environment that she's operating in. Keep that roof up. But safety, the primary concern. So let's take people out of the workplace and employ automation. And not just take them out of harm's way, but take them right out of harm's way. Operate this machine from surface. Don't operate it from underground. In doing that, we need some critical support. We need to have all the sensing that is currently available from the smelling, seeing of the operators, and we've got to do it remotely. So Joy Smart Services is a service offering from Joy Global that allows us to see how the machine's operating and understand its health and its productivity. This data is analyzed in a distributed fashion in centers of technical excellence, and that data analysis comes back to us and comes back to us as information for good decision making. And if we're able to do that, we believe that this target of zero harm, 120 cutting hours a week, and 2,200 ton an hour sustained is eminently possible. So that's the vision, all right? It's a long way from where we are right now, a long way. But that's okay. A great vision. Now we need something more substantial as targets to nail this thing down. And so we try to articulate this in terms of more specifics. Engineers love numbers. And unfortunately or fortunately, we need to galvanize a large number of engineers to get this to happen. So for the Grosvenor project, which is the first longwall off the rank, we broke this down into, as a partnership, a set of targets that we all believed are achievable. We all believed that if we gave ourselves this space, we'd be able to achieve these numbers. And so for the Grosvenor project, essentially what we're saying is we need to be able to operate it remotely, but we'd probably do that from the gate end when we kick this project off. And this is in 2016. That's when this first coal gets turned. And by the end of the fourth block, we'd be able to operate this thing from surface remotely, and we'd be able to do that at benchmark productivity. So very tangible, but importantly, believable targets. We think that this becomes galvanizing. It's a North Star, it's your compass. It keeps the design discussions that you have corralled within very specific parameters. So the second longwall that comes off the production line, we now know that we've learned something, and so when we replicate, we do it more efficiently. So the second longwall gets to those levels of productivity quicker, and that principle gets replicated again and again on the third and fourth machines. That means it focuses you not only on achieving the goal, but then being able to replicate and roll it out quicker. And that's about a business process that enables you to do that. So these numbers, they've become the mantra. This is the first slide we put up whenever we talk to each other, whenever we go into a design review. This is what guides us. It puts a time frame around it, it puts a scale around it. And for the last 12 to 18 months, this is what's really galvanized us. Now let's talk a bit about the design process. Conventionally, Anglo-American, which generally rolled out a longwall every 5 to 6 years, was set up the specification. And when I say the specification, right down to the thread and the bolts that hold the plates on the shearer. That's the level of specification we gave to our suppliers. And the suppliers went away and came back with the price and said, this is what it's going to cost you. But the conversation about, will that solve my problem, was never had. So here was a company who rolled out a longwall every 6 years, telling a company that rolls out a longwall every 3 months how to design a longwall. Well, that didn't make sense. So we changed that. That's the first principle. Second principle is we said we'd be collaborative. We'd be collaborative deeply. We'd be collaborative broadly in this design process. And we did that. We involved just about every operator who knew his oats in our organization, every manager who had an opinion. And I'll tell you what, underground folk, they've got opinions. And we then broke the design process into two phases. One is a concept phase, and one's a detailed design phase. So the concept phase, get the big chunky bits right, get the steel so that it fits the duty. And then peer review it. And these blue blocks are peer reviews, and it's an innocuous sounding process, but what happens is the joy team put a concept design together and come and trot it out in front of people consider themselves to be experts. And we hurl flaming acid guys at the design. Joy then takes that design and goes away and adjusts it and goes into the second phase, which is the detailed design phase. The same thing, we subject that to peer review. And out at the end of that is something that's been through a mill. And hopefully it's polished, it's rounded, and absolutely fit for purpose. And in fact, that culminates in June this month. We'll have a detailed design that's been through 12 months of very collaborative process. Now, that's the process we used. In trying to understand what needs to be changed, we went through an introspection, having a look at what we do. And that broke down into basically six components. But even those six components, really, the first four of those were all about looking inwards, looking at our current operations and saying, what's the gap between what they're doing and what we want this outcome to be? And that took us 12 months. And whether it was looking at delay analysis or looking at safety incidents or looking at the way we maintained and the failure records or looking at cutting rate and saying, well, you know, what's the gap between the 1,500 ton an hour we used to do and the 2,200 ton an hour we need to do? We understood all of those gaps. And then we lifted our head above the parapet and we had a look in Australia and said, who are the best guys out there and how do they do things? And then we lifted our head even higher and we said, right, let's look on the planet, who's doing what, and try and emulate what they do. So we assumed that we didn't know anything and we prepared to learn everything. That turned into thousands and thousands of things we need to change in the design. And we couldn't do all of that. But what we did end up with 850 basic design changes to the base design, which was our longwall at Moranbah, a mine that existed and was cutting in the same seam that this project was going to be deployed in. 850 changes, and I'll just give you an example. There are 168 modifications we're going to make to the design in terms of safety. Well, we picked that up after 2 years of trawling through safety records and incidents and everything, and every time there was an incident where design of equipment had an impact or a contribution to make, we changed that design. And so if you look at the total 850 modifications that we've come up with, you can see their contribution, 500 towards productivity, and about 120 which will change our cutting rate. And if we do that, we'll lift the hours from about 60 hours a week to 120 hours a week, and we'll increase our cutting rate from 1,500 ton an hour to 2,500 ton an hour. Now, if you add those numbers up, it turns it from a 6 million ton a year longwall to a 12 million ton a year longwall. That's the difference. And if you add the economics that gives you, it's really significant. Now, will we get all that? Well, yeah, it's not so straightforward. But at least we have a very clear line of sight to what we need to change. One of the big liberators for this lot is automation. And we discovered that fairly early on in the piece when we found the variability in our current operations was causing a lot of instability in the longwall mining. And so automation was a key. What did we do? As we've said before, it's a deep collaborative approach. We went and dragged all the operators off the face and we sat them down through a couple of days of workshops and we asked them what they did, task by task. And when we understood that, we recognized that actually what they did was broken down really into those three big blobs of work. The first bit is controlling the face, which is obviously creep, horizon, and face alignment. And once they'd done all of that, the rest of it was really about exceptions. So automating the first, that's not difficult. we think we can get that pinned down and we'll have that sorted out at Murrumba by the end of this year. But the second part, the exceptions, what are we talking about here? Well, you know, in the day and life of an operator, the exceptions, he has to manage simple things like hosing fines off the walkway or taking coal out of the Bretby tray. Well, you try and do that when you're sat in a control room 300 meters above you on surface. It's not so easy. Now, clearly, the imperative there is, if you're going to automate and operate remotely, you've got to engineer out all these exceptions as far as practicable. And those that you can't engineer out, you've got to automate. So that's going to be the challenge with automation. It's not automating the machine per se. That we're going to have a handle on. It's getting those exceptions up. So we've come up with a plan. We understand the functionality required. We've come up with a plan with our partners, Joy. 5-year plan. That 5-year plan, if we execute it, will have us operating from surface in 2019. That's the plan. It's got a lot of activity to it, and there's a lot of unknowns. And within those unknowns, a couple of holy grails. But we believe it's worth it. We believe the outcome is going to be the enabler. So there is a silver bullet. It's called automation. So what did we end up with? Simplicity was one of the key themes that went through this whole thing. Keep it simple. Take stuff off that doesn't contribute. And we ended up with a system. And if you look at the top 3 points, it's all about keeping the roof up. Fairly useful in underground and coal mines, apparently. And a very big challenge at Murrumba, which has a really lousy roof. Now, if we can do that, we take out half the delays. So we need to make sure that geotechnically this roof support is beyond reproach. And how do we do that? Well, it's fit for purpose, 1750 tons. It's a lot of power in the roof. It's quick. It moves quick so that each roof support doesn't take an age to move, not 14 seconds like we currently have, but it'll be less than 11 seconds. If we do that, we can put the roof support in right behind the shearer. If we can do that, no cavities, heaven on earth. All right, so that's a good thing. And we think we've got a design that's going to give us all that. So tick in the box. The next thing, it's all about automation. So we've explained what we mean by that, but I emphasize it because that really, for us, absolutely is the key. A little bit more about reliability. All the bells and whistles, how do you make them run all the time? And we did a bit of a simulation study. We used what we call a discrete event simulation model, SIMIO. And what it did, it just puts the entire system into the coal mining system from the shearer to the discharge at the top of the drift into a model. And we simulate the environment we're in terms of reliability. And what do we find? Mean time between failure. So the blue bars that we have on there, that represents where we are today. And the mean time between failure for each of these components, what are you seeing? 10 hours to 20 hours. That's how long each component lasts before it fails on average. What does that give you? It gives you 80 cutting hours a week. All right. It also says that the overall system mean time between failure is about 1.8 hours. That's today. 80 hours, 1.8 hours. Every 1.8 hours, that system breaks down. And to get to 120 hours, the system's got to stay up for 5 hours. It doesn't sound like much, but to do that, that's the brown bars. So the brown bars represent a mean time between failure by component in order to give us 120 hours. And this simulation model let us do that. It let us model each component, and we added in terms of the probability of ease of actually changing that reliability, and we came up with a set of targets, mean time between failure. And there we got the solution of 120 hours. Doesn't sound very complicated, but now the engineers need to go away and tell us, well, quite how are we on the conveyor going to get 45 hours mean time between failure? And there are things you can do. And that's what the team need to go away and actually achieve. So we've broken this thing up. We've gone into the detail to understand exactly what it is and what we need to do to hit the 120 hours a week. So we think we understand that now. There's also the mean time to repair. The same thing, the blue bars, that's what we're currently doing. It takes us about 1.5 hours every time the stage loader breaks down. We can't have that. We've got to halve that. So how do you halve the breakdown time? Well, it's about maintainability. So in the design process, maintainability, critical. And we design for maintainability. If it breaks, it's easy to replace. It's not stuck underneath and difficult to get to. But it's not going to break down to start off with. All right. Now, we've been learning stuff for 12 to 18 months. And we've been applying the learnings. And we've been applying those learnings at our current operation at Murrumba. And so this improvement that we've seen has taken Murrumba from 80 cutting hours to 80,000 tons a week to 180,000 tons a week over 12 months. That's a change that we've experienced. And a lot of it's been because of the application of what we've learned as part of this design process. And that's made up of obviously cutting rate and cutting hours. So we've taken the cutting rate to just shy of 2,000 ton an hour at Murrumba, and we're operating at just shy of 100 hours a week at Murrumba in 12 months. That's the difference that we've been able to achieve because we've applied the learnings from the design process back into our current operations. So that's useful. And just to highlight that, this table on the right just shows you we're using automation now 70%, where we used to use it 30%. So it's a big change in automation. But what it's stopped is, it stopped the wall bending. All the bending and pitching and rolling and cavorting that our wall used to do, which strangely enough breaks stuff. And Joy was at pains to point out that the broken dog bone and the relay bar that's fallen over, and you know, it's you guys are not operating it particularly well, and we weren't. But when we fixed that, you can see the thing bends around 10 to 30% less. That's what these measures are telling us. Great stuff, and it's become more reliable, and all of that has meant that we're doing 180,000 ton a week. Well, that's a great improvement. So we're proving what we're designing in what we're doing. Useful. Given all of that, we understand what we need to do to improve the reliability. We understand what we need to do to improve the cutting rate, and we're applying that. We also know that the process we've been on, the journey we've been on, has added a lot of value. And so we've got to codify that process and replicate the process of learning. And that's our intention. We'll take the learnings, it's in the Grosvenor design. We'll take the learnings, it'll be in the design for Grosvenor 2 and so on. And then we'll continue to repeat the process, because if we do that, hopefully, benchmark, we become and remain benchmark producers of underground coking coal. And that's me done, folks. Any questions? Right.
What questions? Could you please come to the mic here in the center and identify yourself?
Good morning, Dieter. Thanks for the presentation. My name is Terry Francis. I'm a consultant in Brisbane. Most interested, commend you for the vision. The reduction in manning, I'd be interested to know what sort of numbers you expect, because you can engineer things, you can take equipment and improve things there, but there's still going to be people involved in the operation, and they're critical to the success. So what's your reduction in manning for your 6 million tonne a year mines?
Half.
So you're going to halve that?
Half.
Okay, because the Central Queensland and the Galilee Basin are looking for lots of people, so that's probably the way to go.
So over the course of the next few years, you're going to open 7 mines?
7, of which we can add 4 longwalls.
7, 4 longwall operations?
Yeah.
7 mines.
Yeah.
Do we have any other questions? Okay. Thank you, dear.
Thank you.